I'm Megan Murphy, host of The Same Drugs. I am here to have conversations. Real, honest, authentic conversations. The kind we aren't supposed to have anymore. I interview anyone who is interesting to me, from left to right to everywhere in between. I work independently in order to have the freedom to say what I believe and speak to whoever I want. But with independence comes a lot of work and some insecurity, so I rely on donors and patrons, individuals, in other words, to support my work so I can continue to do what I do. Please consider becoming a subscriber on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Megan Murphy. Thank you so much for supporting Conversations Outside the Algorithm. Today on the show, I am speaking with Jay Cameron, litigation director at the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, a nonprofit law firm dedicated to the education and defense of Canadians' constitutional rights. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm really looking forward to talking with you again.
It's my pleasure, Megan. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about this bill, C-10. Whose initiative was this?
This is the Liberal government's like second or third kick at the can on how to police the internet. And so what this is an amendment to the Broadcasting Act. And the Broadcasting Act previously applied to TV and radio, and now they're trying to extend it into the realm of the internet to say that the internet is a broadcaster, and therefore the CRTC will have control over regulating content on the internet.
Okay, and why is the Liberal government invested in regulating online speech of Canadians?
I think that there's an ideological under agenda to control what people say and to control the narrative in society. It sounds conspiratorial, but it's something that can be substantiated by looking back at what the Liberal government has attempted to do over the course of the last 4 or 5 years regarding things like online hate. In 2019, there was a push to regulate online hate. But when you started digging into what they meant by online hate, what it came down to was that was the regulation of things that the Liberal government disagreed with. A disagreement with the new orthodoxy, and it wasn't hate at all. But that sort of fell apart, and this is the latest iteration of how to control what Canadians think and talk about and what the narrative is in society. So, I mean, they'll say that it's about promoting Canadian content, but the problem with that really is that, I mean, there's a couple problems. I mean, you know, not to be unpatriotic, but the fact is that if Canadian content was really, really very, very good, you wouldn't need to defend it and try and make people watch it against their will, right? They would want to watch it. And so it's just protectionism. The CRTC has had control over all sorts of things for a long time with respect to Canadian content and a certain percentage of Canadian content on the radio and the TV. And so what the Liberals are saying, their official justification for this is that they have to protect and ensure that there's a sufficient amount of Canadian content. But really, like I said, when you go back and you start looking through what the Liberal government has been up to over the course of the last few years, you can tell that, well, and I mean, they've said at various instances that really what they want to do is have some control over what is said on social media and have a regulator who decides what is hateful and what is not hateful. And, if you've seen my testimony from 2019 at the subcommittee that was studying online hate, you can see that very statement made by a Liberal MP, Nathaniel Erskine-Smith. So this is not a new thing.
Yeah, I mean, the CanCon thing is like pretty amusing because, like you say, I mean, CanCon is nobody likes it. So that's why they have to force us all to, you know, like watch these terrible shows on the CBC. And, you know, when I was doing radio at the Co-op Radio in Vancouver, I think we had to use like 80% Canadian music on the shows, which was just like, brutal.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I'm sure you know, like, CBC ratings are crashing. No one's interested.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole marketplace of the idea of ideas, right? That good content will rise to the top, that the pursuit of truth will ultimately win out. You know, and so anytime you try and prevent that process from happening, it's people ought to be suspicious. And Canadians are very suspicious about Bill C-10, and they should be.
Well, I'm glad to hear the Canadians are suspicious, because one of my great frustrations with Canadians and with Canada is that people are so incredibly complacent and so trusting of the government, and really just seem to have faith for no apparent reason that, you know, the government has their best interests in mind. You know, like a lot of people do seem to be concerned about Bill C-10, but there's also been people who've responded to me because I've been, you know, writing about it or posting about it or talking about it or whatever, acting as though I'm being hyperbolic and ridiculous because, you know, like, what's wrong with regulating hate speech online? You know, this is fine. What are you talking about, totalitarianism, Megan? Like,
yeah, I mean, and you're right. I mean, Canadians are very, very complacent. They've had it so good for so long that they just assume that the government is going to continue to respect the rights that are codified in the Canadian Constitution and in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And that's a very naive position to take. And so when I say, you know, Canadians are suspicious, I mean, I think you're right. I think, you know, by and large, Canadians are asleep, but there are some Canadians. Okay, there are some Canadians who are suspicious, and they're the ones who fill up the comment sections on these articles about Bill C-10. So, I mean, some people are awake to the danger, but I think you're right. By and large, the public is asleep.
Why do you think that is? You know, why is Canada? I mean, Canada is so incredibly different from the U.S. in that regard. Obviously, you know, Americans are very protective of their rights and freedoms, and Canadians just seem like they can't be bothered. It's like free speech. Why would we need that?
Yeah, there's a lot of differences between the American mindset and the Canadian mindset. I mean, a part of it is that the Americans had to fight a war to separate from the British Empire. And so they're very independent. And, you know, I can't remember if it's Jefferson or Madison who said, you know, we should be very suspicious about the first interference with our liberties, right? The first infringement of our liberties. We should immediately take umbrage at that, right? And Canadians just are not, by and large, you know, Canadians are quite content with the welfare state. And not that there's anything wrong with welfare, okay? That's not what I'm saying. But they're quite content with big government. And the growing control that government exercises over their lives. And, you know, whereas in America, there's a lot of people who still believe in the concepts of liberty as a paramount principle to govern the country. Canadians are quite happy to have the government say, well, we're going to keep you safe and we're going to take all your rights away, but you're going to be very safe. And Canadians, you know, a lot of them are quite happy with that. So it's a conundrum.
Yeah. So my understanding is that the issue with this act and this bill is that the Liberal government took out, or, you know, wants to take out the part of the act that protects individuals, essentially, so that, you know, because in the past it hasn't applied to individuals and what individuals post or share or publish online. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, there was an exemption clause that has been taken out in Bill C-10, and that's Section 4.1 of the Broadcasting Act, and it's been removed, and it exempted individual content, and so obviously that's something that's in the crosshairs right now.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you for a sec. There's a bit of, and there might not be anything we can do about it, and if so, that's fine. But there's a bit of feedback on your end. I'm not sure, like in the audio, but I don't know if there's really anything that we can do or why that would be.
I could try a different set of headphones.
Okay, it's just like a tiny, like there's like a bit of feedback ringing sound there that we could get rid of, but it's not the end of the world if we can't.
All right, just let me.
I can't hear you. Oh, you're muted. Like, I can see the little mute button. There you go.
Okay. Is this or is it just as bad?
Yeah, no, it's just as bad, and I think you're quieter now.
Oh, really?
Wait, hold on. Let's talk again.
Okay, what about now? Testing.
Yeah, they're a bit quieter and the feedback's still there, so maybe there's nothing we can do about it. It's okay. It's not that bad. It's just a bit. I can't hear you anymore.
What about now? That's no headphones.
Oh, okay. Well, now the feedback's gone. That's interesting, because usually headphones help with feedback issue. Yeah. That's strange. Okay, well, yeah, the feedback's gone now. You're a little bit quiet, though. Are you able to turn up your mic a little bit?
What about now? Is that better? Am I
louder? Yeah.
Is that too loud?
No, that's good.
Okay. I'm going to let the dog out. The dog wants to go out. So just
okay, cool.
1 second. So he's not crying in the background.
Yeah. All good. I get it.
All right. You're free. Go.
Sorry. Okay. Let's continue. So they're talking about, you know, what it like when they're talking about regulating, are they talking about regulating hate speech online? Is that what they're saying?
Officially, no. What they're saying is that this is all about Canadian content and making sure that social media influencers comply with Canadian laws. However, David Lametti said yesterday that that it's possible to infringe the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms where necessary. That's always the default position of the government. You know, the default position should be we're going to protect Canadians' rights and freedoms. That is what we're tasked to do. That's one of the reasons why we're in government. But the default position of government is always these days, it's possible to infringe the right when necessary or when we say that it's in the public interest, which is not the same thing necessarily, because you have a regulator and you have a government that is known for supporting a particular orthodoxy saying, we're in the public interest is necessary to regulate what you say on social media. And you're an influencer. I mean, you're somebody who has a lot of people who follow you and they're interested in what you have to say. And I mean, the bottom line is that there are lots of people in the Canadian government who don't like what you have to say. Lots of them would probably say it's hate speech, right? Whenever you say that a man doesn't have a uterus, they would probably say that that's hateful, even though you're just stating a biological principle. That's definitely where they're coming at this from.
Does the Canadian government have a definition for hate speech? You know, what does hate mean? Have they said this out loud, what they're even talking about?
So back in 2019, when they were talking about regulating online hate, that was one of the big issues in the media. What is hate? And there was no definition in the act. And the Liberals and the NDP, they refused to propose a definition of hate. Basically, what they were saying is, well, we'll know it when we see it, and the regulator will know it when they see it, and then they're going to scrub it, right? And so, but no, there's no definition for it. I mean, the Supreme Court of Canada, for the purposes of Section 318 and 319 of the Criminal Code, defines hate speech as extreme detestation and vilification. We're talking about really, really aggressive, offensive, derogatory,
you know, slurs where you're attempting to incite genocide or something like that. I mean, in the incitement of genocide is one of the things that is covered with respect to hate speech laws. But because the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is so strong on freedom of speech, permission has to be obtained from the Attorney General of a province or of Canada in order to prosecute for hate speech. And so, you know, that rarely occurs. And the reason it rarely occurs is because the vast majority of what is said in society does not qualify as hate. The Supreme Court of Canada has said, you know, hate is not ridicule. You know, it's not mockery. You know, it's not expressing strong words of disagreement. It's not criticizing religion. These things are not hatred. And so there's a lot of strong protections, you know, and in your case, you know, saying that a man doesn't have a uterus, you know, the Supreme Court of Canada would have no problem saying, well, that's not hate speech. You know, that's not against the law. And so what the liberals say is that the existing laws with respect to hate speech are not sufficient. We have to have some extra mechanism to police what people are saying. And we have to have some regulator. Like it all comes back to red tape. Canada is like one of the most overregulated societies on the planet. But, you know, what they want to do is create more regulation over what you can think and what you can say, you know, and what you can, you know, express on the internet. So, that's a long answer of saying that there is no definition outside of the criminal code, which would say that something is hateful.
And, you know, how would this actually play out should this bill pass? You know, what does it mean to be, you know, how would they regulate the speech of individuals or the content that individuals are publishing online?
Well, so that's the thing from the government's perspective. They're bound by the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And so your interactions with the state, if the state says you can't do something, you can't say something, think something, you know, that is covered by the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And, you know, you could see what's coming here from a mile away. What's going to happen is that the Canadian government is going to say, well, online regulators are tasked with regulating certain speech that is, you know, undesirable, that it's hateful, right, without defining that word, and the vagueness is part of the problem. But what they'll say is that, you know, the charter doesn't cover Facebook removing something that a social influencer said or what Twitter has censored, because those are private media platforms and they're not the government. But what the government is doing is they're bringing coercion to bear on those social media companies with a threat of fines to say, you know, if you don't take it down within a certain period of time, you're going to get a fine. And or we're going to prevent you from operating in Canada. And so that's the way that they impose a particular orthodoxy.
Right. And so, you know, members of the government who are supporting this bill have been, you know, straight out denying that this is what they're doing. I think the other day, the House of Commons heard from Heritage Committee, or the House of Commons Heritage Committee heard from Janet Yale, who's the chair of the Broadcasting and Telecommunications Legislative Review Panel. And she straight up said, I mean, she's not a member of the government, but she testified, individuals who create content, amateur or professional audiences, large or small, are not affected by Bill C-10. No one is going to police that content, tell them what they can say, or compel them to pay dues. You know, they've been claiming that the only point is just to regulate these like wealthy corporations like YouTube, Disney Plus, Netflix, companies who make money from Canadians off the content they share will be impacted. But supposedly, you know, they keep insisting that individuals won't be impacted. Are they straight up lying?
I think that part of the issue here is that you set this creature in motion who's going to police it? Who's going to regulate it and oversee it and see whether or not what's being scrubbed from social media companies or from people's websites, whether or not that is content that ought to be taken down. I mean, now let's face it, the vast majority, 99.9% of content is going to be legal as per the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms and Section 318 and 319 of the Criminal Code, but it's still going to disappear. And we know it's still going to disappear because it's disappearing now. You have people who are being deplatformed at an enormous rate at universities, online and social media companies. And you already have, I mean, 2018, the CRTC was proposing that that the internet is the new television. It is the new broadcasting medium to society, and therefore it ought to have the ability to regulate what happens on the internet. Well, why does it want the ability to regulate what's happening on the internet? It's because the internet is like like the frontier still. It's an open venue, and you know, people who are in power. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. People who are in power always want to prevent people from criticizing the government, saying things that are not orthodox. You know, I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but there used to be an index of prohibited books that was maintained by the Catholic Church for hundreds of years. You know, wow. I mean, they were banning people from reading these books. Having a copy of some of these books was punishable by death. They had book burnings. Well, who was on the banned list of books? Well, that must have been very, very serious. Well, and you go back and you look through the banned list of books, and it's like Galileo, Copernicus, Victor Hugo, who wrote Les Mis, you know, John Locke, David Hume, Charles de Montesquieu, the French philosopher, who said that when the legislature and the executive are combined, there can be no liberty. You know, I mean, these are people who are expressing ideas that are contrary to the orthodoxy of the time. And so this is not a new phenomenon. So deplatforming is the old book burning. That's what it is. And, you know, it is, you know, there are people who want to prevent you from saying things and expressing certain ideas. And in your line of work, you know very well all about that.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It seems really clear that what is, you know, the way that internet censorship goes down. So the people who are banned from social media platforms, the kind of content that is banned from social media platforms, it does really seem to be primarily about banning content or individuals who are critical of the state. I mean, look at how they're dealing with, you know, people who are critical of the response to COVID, for example. It's not, you know, it's not about like, oh, you're posting dangerous information that endangers people's health. I think it's about people are challenging the narrative that the government is trying to force on people and to normalize.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, again, the marketplace of ideas, scientific inquiry. I mean, the Justice Center is in discussions and has taken on cases for physicians who have been, you know, they're in trouble with their professional regulators because they're saying, well, lockdowns are bad. You know, there's a disproportionate cost to locking down that is hurting society. If there's any benefit from it, it's far outweighed by the devastation, in people's lives that we're seeing. And, you know, I mean, they're being told by the colleges of physicians, you will not say that. You know, you will not create, vaccine hesitancy, for example. Well, I was talking to a doctor, in BC, and he was saying, you know, I know these patients. I've known them for 20 or 30 years, and, you know, they got the Moderna shot, and, within 24 to 72 hours, they were experiencing neurological symptoms. And, you know, the colleges of physicians is saying, well, you can't say that. You know, you can't work in the emergency room if you say that. And, You know, those are just his personal observations. And so going back to Galileo, you know, Galileo made an observation that the earth is not the center of the universe. And in fact, it travels around the sun. And because that was contrary to the prevailing orthodoxy, he had to face the Inquisition. And then he spent the last 7 years of his life under house arrest. And so, you know, the governments and the powers that be protect a particular narrative, and they have been for centuries. But you're right as far as the comments that are being scrubbed, and that's primarily criticism of the government, and that has to do with, you know, lockdowns and things like that. And I think, you know, it's important to remember that the reason we have a constitution in the first place is to protect the ability to think and speak in the face of the control of people who are in power, right? And that's why you have an independent judiciary to say, look, you cannot prevent Galileo from saying that the earth is not the center of the universe. Okay. As much as you want to prevent him from saying that. Okay. Or you cannot prevent Megan Murphy from saying men do not have uteruses. You know, that might be a cherished sacred position of your government, but she still has the right, right? That's why you have this overarching law called the Constitution. And so, I mean, politicians get this backwards all the time. They want to say, well, the rule of law means when we pass a law, you have to comply with it. And so the Constitution is a very inconvenient thing for politicians because it says you can't prevent somebody from thinking or speaking or assembling or protesting or worshiping. You know, you can't do that. And, you know, governments hate to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, the government doesn't really seem to understand why rights exist at all. Like,
no,
Canadians have rights so that the government can't infringe on their rights, but they're behaving as though they dole out the rights and they decide to take them away when they think that it's, you know, when it's inconvenient for them or whatever, or when it's convenient.
That's another key difference between the American principle of where rights come from and the Canadian theory of where rights come from. The Americans say rights are inalienable, that they come from God. The Canadians say the rights come from the state, or a lot of Canadians say that. And in fact, I've heard prominent politicians like Jason Kenney giving speeches, you know, theorizing, pontificating, bloviating, if you will, about how rights come from the government, and therefore the government can take them away, which is asinine. And the reason it's asinine is that none of us exist because of the government. Okay, if the government stopped existing tomorrow, still people would procreate and there would be babies, and the government doesn't have anything to say about that. Okay. And so I came into existence in this world. My mind is not given to me by the government. My mouth is not given to me by the government. My ears are not given to me by the government. And so, you know, at the basic level, the government is attempting to control something that it is not the creator of. That it has no ownership of it. And, you know, I have one brain, you know, you have one brain, right? We have our own minds. And so, you know, the concept of individual rights comes out of the fact that we have our own faculties and the right to pursue truth and to think about, you know, the things that we want to think about and talk about and things like that. And so, yes, I mean, it's a long-winded, answer, Megan, but there you have it.
So what has the pushback been like, and where has the pushback come from? Has there been a really strong pushback against this bill and the Liberals?
Well, I think unfortunately a lot of the political parties are saying we'll support this bill. Now, not all of them. I think at various points in time, other political parties have said, well, you know, this is, you know, we're concerned about the regulation of speech and infringements of Section 2B of the Charter. But primarily, it's been the Conservative government. And I mean, I think that to some extent, their objection to C-10 has been, you know, not as strong as it should have been. But sort of there's increasing awareness in some political circles that this would be a game changer. You think about who is impacted by the ability of the CRTC to police internet content, and it's everybody, you know, And we know how this stuff starts. They're going to say, well, you know, the CRTC is not going to be controlling individual content, but who's going to make sure that that's the case? There's nothing in the law requiring the CRTC to keep its hands off of individual content. And there's the issue of discoverability as well. And we know that that kind of censorship is already taking place on Twitter and Facebook. You know, you can get access to every abhorrent, perverted, disgusting thing on Twitter, but you can't say a woman is not a man, you know, because Twitter says that's hate, or it infringes their, you know, their online safety protocols, you know. And so the CRTC inevitably, I think, if you give it this power to regulate the internet, it's going to mutate and mutate and mutate until you know, you're in a situation where there's modern day book burnings every single day, every single second, where content is being taken down or prevented from being discovered. That's human history, and it's repeating itself.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that people who are not advocates for free speech will say often is, it's like, well, you know, you can still speak, you know, like, okay, so you were banned from Twitter, but you can still speak. No one's stopping you from speaking. Or, you know, they'll say, like, it's fine that they're hiding content or manipulating the algorithm, or, you know, putting these notices on various content saying, like, sensitive content, or shadow banning people, things like that, on YouTube, on Twitter, Facebook, so on and so forth. They're like, well, that's not actually censorship, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it is censorship. And you know, anybody who's ever been deplatformed, I mean, the Justice Center uploaded a video with factual content. It wasn't theorizing. It was factual content. It was, you know, news clips and spliced together and things like that. And within an hour, it was taken down off of YouTube. And so, I mean, anybody who's experienced it knows that it's very real.
Right. And I mean, and the other way that people get censored, but that some will claim doesn't actually constitute censorship, is the demonetization. So, you know, when people's YouTube videos get demonetized or channels get demonetized, which, no, I guess this isn't technically censorship, but I mean, if you can't make a living off of your work, then you can't do your work anymore. You're going to have to go do something else. Like,
right. Yeah, that's right. If you can't make money, then you starve to death and you disappear, right? Or you have to go get a job instead of making content on the internet. But the other thing is that the government is promoting a particular narrative using bailouts, right? You have massive bailouts that have been given to legacy media outlets to the tune of $600 million, and you know, you can't tell me that money doesn't come with some sort of collateral hook, right? News agencies that can't survive without bailout money are subject to influence. You don't bite the hand that feeds you if you're not going to be able to survive. And so that is, you know, that's the other side of that coin. You demonetize, you know, one viewpoint, and you extra monetize the other viewpoint so that becomes the narrative.
Right, right. Do you think that it's likely that this bill will pass?
It's in committee now. It's passed second reading, and there's all sorts of amendments that are being debated. We know or we hear that an election is on the horizon. It's possible that an election gets called before this gets passed, and that would kill it. You know, it's possible that the political parties look at it and say, you know, we're not going to support this. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, ill-advised legislation has a history of coming through Parliament and then being dealt with later in the courts. And so I think the chances are fairly good that the CRTC, within a relatively short period of time, finds itself in charge of policing the internet. in Canada, which, you know, to some extent, to a significant extent, it alters the fabric of Canadian society. It's an attack on free speech that is akin to, you know, the oppressive regimes in China and in other places of the world, which censor internet content.
And so this would apply to people living in Canada or Canadian citizens. Like, how would this actually work if, for example, you were a Canadian citizen, but you moved to Mexico and you were still producing content, not from within Canada?
It's a really good question. And I think that the answer might be that the content, if it's being viewed in Canada, is subject to, they're going to say it's subject to some sort of restrictions. And that's not any different than China, right? You know, there are websites that you can't look at in China because the Chinese government says, well, that's off limits, right? That's critical of the government, or it's critical of some Marxist sacred principle.
just thinking of options, you know.
Yeah. The sky's the limit when you start controlling what people can say, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I guess, I mean, if for example, an election was called, the Liberals are voted out, the Conservative Party won the election, would we sort of have a better chance of escaping this kind of regulation, or?
Really. I'll be the first to tell you that I don't have any faith in political parties. The conservatives will tell you that if they get into power, they're going to protect free speech, right? They stand for the Constitution. I mean, why every single political party doesn't stand for the Constitution and have that as part of their platform, I can't tell you. I couldn't explain that, right? Why do all these political parties want to have the power to control what you can say online? There are laws against hate speech. They're on the books, right? And they prohibit certain content already. And so, you can be prosecuted for something that you say or post online, as a Canadian. But those laws are respectful by and large of the Charter's protections of freedom of speech. And so, you know, why do they want this extra power? Well, it's only, you know, when you boil it right down to it, it's only to control speech and ideas that they find disagreeable. That is the bottom line. Otherwise you would just allow things to continue to function as they are. And the internet has been, I mean, there's a lot of garbage on the internet, but the internet does a lot of wonderful things, and it opens a lot of wonderful doors, and it is a marketplace of ideas. That's why we can have a conversation like this still. Can you have this conversation if the CRTC is policing the internet? I don't know. I hope we never find out, but we might.
Right, for sure. I'm curious to know, you know, what are some cases of, like, have people been prosecuted for things that they've said on the internet in Canada?
Nothing comes to mind. I know people have been prosecuted for or been subject to human rights complaints, as you know, over pamphlets, leaflets, things that they say in the newspaper, things that they say in public. I don't know if there's examples of, Megan, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. I mean, maybe we should.
I mean, I can't think of any. Sorry, what was that?
Maybe we should cut this part of the interview. I thought that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I thought that Section 318 and 319 of the Criminal Code applies to any speech. I can't imagine that, like, if you said on Twitter, like death to Jews or something like that. Although, you know, there is that kind of stuff on Twitter.
Yeah, there is.
There is that kind of stuff on Twitter. So, yeah. I mean, maybe nailing down who's saying what, is a difficult thing to do under the Criminal Code, but I can't imagine it not extending to the criminal realm. I can't imagine that.
Do you want me to cut this question out, or are you okay with it?
Yeah, if you cut this question, I think it would be better, because okay. I'm honest with you, Megan, I'm not sure of the answer.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll just cut it out. Yeah. So, you know, for Canadians who are concerned about this and want to do something, what can they do?
Well, I think that the louder the objection is to Bill C-10 and the possibility of handing control over people's speech on the internet, I think the louder the objection is to that in Parliament, the better. So you can write your MP and you can call and speak to your member of Parliament and tell them how unhappy you are and keep calling. So that's certainly one thing you can do. There is a petition that's circulating to stop the policing of the internet and the censorship of the internet. So you could sign that. I saw a letter that had been written to Justin Trudeau recently, and it was saying, please stop attempting to suppress information on the internet. And it was signed by a lot of very prominent people who have concerns. And so, I mean, you can add your voice to that as well. Mm-hmm. And then I think that the other thing that you can do is the same thing that you can do all the time in a free and democratic society, and that's exercise your right to speak and to be a free individual. There's this great quote from Learned Hand, the judge in the U.S., and he said that when liberty dies in the hearts of men and women, there's no constitution and no court that can save it. You know, so, I mean, if you want to be a free individual in a free and democratic society, that starts with you. That starts with me. So do that. Be free.
Definitely. Totally. Awesome. That's a great way to end. Thanks so much for talking with me again. And I mean, I can't ever thank you enough for all the work that you all do over at the Justice Center. It's like so important. And it seems like you guys are among the few in Canada who are actually on top of all this and pushing back. And I know how hard you all work, so I really appreciate it.
We appreciate being around, and we appreciate the work that you do as well. Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Megan Murphy, host of The Same Drugs. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a patron on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Megan Murphy. I rely solely on donors and individual supporters to continue to do the work I do. You can donate as little as $5 a month or more. It all counts. Thank you so much for supporting Conversations Outside the Algorithm.